Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
We are live here on Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, Inspirational Speaker, and Author, Sean Douglas. Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our listeners who are listening from wherever you are. This show is heard in 27 countries, so thank you to everyone who is listening around the world and listening to this show today. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here we tell the stories of why we are doing what we're doing and how we are helping others to transform. You can listen to us every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time and on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. On the show, we have impactful and amazing guests that are elevating and doing amazing things in the world around them. So if you have any questions for the guests, this is an absolute live show, so you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. We will screen the call so that no crazies get through. And my guest today is no different than the other amazing guests that we have on the show, except he's a mind reader and a magician. So welcome to the show, Jonathan Pritchard. What's up, buddy?
Hey, glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I am super pumped, man. So we connected, last year, was it? Like last year sometime?
Yeah.
I was on your show, Design Your Best Life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's for me, it's one of those things like when you get along with somebody really well, you just have always known them. So it mm-hmm. feels like one of those things like, oh, yeah, we go way back. It might be 5 minutes or 5 years. I don't know. But it's just like, oh, yeah, we're on the same wavelength. Cool guy. All right. We're in.
Yep.
But, yeah, I've had a guest on the show, A Life Well Designed, that I used to have. And as you well know, running a radio show, man, it is so tough to be at a particular place at a particular time and invest all that time around the broadcast and recording and all the stuff that goes into it, because it's not just the time we're spending right now. It's the time mm-hmm. we've spent organizing this and all that jazz. So being on the road as a performer and a speaker, I realized, man, I don't have the time to keep doing this. So I kind of wrapped it up, but it still lives on in perpetuity on the site. So I still have it available to everybody. It's just a project that kind of transitioned out due to reality.
Yeah, no kidding. But it is an amazing podcast. So anybody listening, go back and find it. A Life Well Designed. It is just so amazing. He's had amazing guests. Some guests I know, some guests I've met for the first time. But yeah, amazing opportunity that brought us together. And throughout, like earlier this year, you know, I was doing a show with Bren Dubay from Canada, and we just did like a Friday mastermind thing. I was like, "Ooh, I'm gonna call Jonathan." Like you were like, "Hey, I'm just hanging out. Like here I am." Like jumped on the show.
Yeah, awesome.
So
yeah, I don't remember where in the country I was, but man, it was a breath of fresh air to connect with really cool people out of the middle of nowhere. Like get a call. Like sure, I'll hop on. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I love the connecting part. Like that's what drives me to keep doing the shows, is that connecting part. So definitely into that. So you ready to get started, my man?
Absolutely. Let's dig in.
Let's do it. So this episode is titled Like a Mind Reader with Jonathan Pritchard. Jonathan Pritchard is an entertainer turned speaker, coach, and author. Colleges, businesses, and entrepreneurs book him to talk about his insights into human behavior, success psychology, motivation, and communication. For the past decade, he's been on TV and toured the world as a mentalist, which has given him unique insight into why people do what they do and how to leverage that process to create a custom fit life. His passion for connecting with audiences means people are drawn to his dynamic presenting style, and he always leaves them amazed with demonstrations of mind-to-mind communication. When not on the road speaking, you can find Jonathan in Chicago practicing Kung Fu every morning. His book is titled A Mind Reader's Guide to Ethical Influence, and it's an insight from a professional mind reader on how to get people to like you and do what you need done. You can find him on facebook.com/likeamindreader, and then his website is www.thinklikeamindreader.com. You can find him all over the place. You can YouTube him. You can Facebook him. He's freaking everywhere.
Everywhere all the time. Yeah.
All the time. I was just going to say, he's everywhere.
That's right. Man, that's a heck of an introduction. I love it.
Dude, I love the fact that it says – you have a passion for connecting with audiences, right? And why they do what they do. Like, but that's why that's part of the show is why people do what they do. And it's funny that people bring you in to give other people insight on why they do. So I want you to tell us why you do what you do.
All right. What it really boils down to is my work is the perfect context for me to exercise my creativity in a complete bandwidth, right? There's nothing that is lacking. It's kind of like, well, I love doing this, so that informs my work. It's not like I've got to cut part of me off. I just get to show up and do what I love to do for really cool people. So that's the kind of short answer for why I do what I do.
Perfect. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a crazy journey getting here too, right? Because I grew up in the mountains of North Carolina in a single wide trailer on a dirt road, right? My dad worked in factories until he retired just like a couple months ago, and my mom's still a secretary, and I didn't grow up with money or access to mentors that are multi-million dollar, right? I didn't grow up with that. So my mentors were books. Right? I would spend my day after school, right? I would take the bus and just go to the library because that was around the corner from where mom was working. So in the couple hours until she was off work, I would just go to the library and read books. Like, that's what I did. 2-3 hours every day after school, just go read. And I wound up checking out art books and magic books. And those were my first mentors, basically.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, it is a lot of fun.
So how did you – so is that how you began that process of doing what you're doing with the mentalist and the speaking? And is that what it was? Is just going to the library and the books just kind of opened up your heart and mind to like what's possible?
Yeah, it was just a fun thing to do because, I mean – back then, I was so shy. I wouldn't even ask for condiments at a restaurant, right? I would just rather go without it than to bother the stranger, right? I thought it would be an imposition on them, and I didn't want to bother them. So I was just so shy, I wouldn't. And I started realizing that, you know, it's the popular kids. It's the outgoing people who knew how to have fun and be likable that seemed to get all the cool stuff out of life. Right. And I'm about 13 years old at this point, and I've been doing magic tricks since I was 5 years old, but only for my family. Just, I would bother my parents all the time. Like, Hey mom, pick a card. I've seen this one before. No. This is a different one. I promise. So, okay, Jonathan, they have the patience of saints, really, is what it is.
Right.
But when I'm 13, I'm still super shy, but I've been doing these magic tricks. But I learned how to juggle from my dad, and all of his brothers knew how to juggle. And I went, well, I guess I should learn. And I learned how to juggle. Then later that year in the summer, there was an after-school program, but for the summer. And I got plugged into there, and it turns out that the director of that program was a retired street performer from South Florida. He's done doing the clowning thing on the street, hustling for money, and just kind of retired to the mountains and thought, well, I like working with people. Let's do an after a summer program. Well, he saw that I could juggle and goes, hey, do you want to learn how to juggle pins? I was like, yeah, why not? So then I learned how to juggle, and juggling is really neat because I could do it in front of a crowd without having to engage with them, right? So it's just kind of a skill demonstration that I wouldn't have to talk or interact with people. I would just juggle, and then people give you a positive feedback. Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible, right? So that kind of positive feedback without me really having to put myself out there was me starting to get out of my shell. Then later that year, if you know how to juggle pins, you automatically know how to juggle fire because torches are pins with one end.
Did you say juggle fire?
Yeah. Yeah. You just basically take a pin, wrap some wick around it, and then set it on fire. And there you go. So I'm a 13-year-old kid who's juggling fire. And my parents were on board. They were okay with it. They were like, well, he's learning from a professional and he's young, so he'll heal quick. It's fine. So I'm 13 years old juggling fire, and it's just people are amazed. Like, oh my God, this is incredible. This kid's juggling fire. This is amazing. So that was good for my ego, right? So
right.
I stole shtick from my mentor, Randall. He just gave me all of his lines, all of his audience interaction bits, right? And when you have a script to work from, it's a lot easier to interact with people because you know exactly what comes next.
Right.
So I didn't really have to think on my feet much, but I was interacting with the audience and making people laugh. And I figured out, you know, this is fun. This feels good. But I still had a problem. I think almost entirely in pictures and images. It's really difficult for me to translate those images into words to have a normal conversation with people. I would still have to go, all right, let me draw you a picture if we were talking about an idea or anything. So I realized, all right, in high school, I've got to take debate classes to learn how to speak in front of people and get right. over the freak out of having to talk in front of people off the cuff. So that's what I did. Most Saturdays in high school, I spent at debate tournaments at other high schools. That was me.
Wow.
That's what I did. I just realized, yep, I need this skill. And the only way it's going to get better is to work at it. So I put myself in an uncomfortable position in order to get that skill set that I knew I needed. So at this time, I'm performing, I'm juggling, I'm doing magic tricks, kind of traditional card tricks and that kind of fun stuff, along with the juggling. And I got my first professional paid gig when I was 14 for $200. I just juggled for an hour. $200 an hour, like that's not bad for a 14-year-old kid, right? So I realized, well, I can get paid for doing this stuff, so I guess that's what I'm going to get paid to do. And I always knew that I wanted to go to college for art and painting because I just love drawing and creating cool imagery. So that's what I went to college for, but I knew full well that I would be a performer and that would be my profession is performing. And then when I'm in college, I meet my other mentor, James Randi, who is a world-renowned critical thinker and kind of MacArthur Genius Grant recipient. And he's super famous for the $1 million paranormal challenge. So people uh-huh. who claim to have supernatural powers, well, tell us what you can do, under what conditions, and with what accuracy. We design a double-blind test to evaluate the claim. You pass, you get $1 million. So I connected with him. He came to my college, Berea College. He came there to do a lecture, and being in the magic world, man, this guy's a legend. I have to meet him. So I weaseled my way to escort him from the on-campus hotel to where he was supposed to be over here. And I wound up cutting classes for 2 days because we were just hanging out and having a good time. And I realized, right. I go, you know what? This is it. This is my opportunity. If I wait for him to offer me a job, I'm never going to get it. So I have to ask him for it. So I just said, look, hey, Randy, if you need help at the foundation over the summers, I'm sure I could put together some sort of independent study and get funding for it. So that way it wouldn't cost you anything, but you have an extra set of hands. Whatever you need doing, I can help. All right, you're hired.
Wow.
And that's how I got the job, right? So he didn't offer me the job. I imagined it, created it, and put it in terms that no risk for him. So that's how I wound up going to Fort Lauderdale for 4 summers in college. I just lived a mile off the beach, hung out at the foundation, lived there, and then rode my skateboard to the beach after work every day and just hung out. It was way too much fun. So I saw all the ways people were trying to scam their way to the $1 million, right? People applying to the challenge. They go, all right, I got a way to trick them that they don't know about. Well, the thing is, Randy is old as all get out. He's seen all the tricks hundreds of times. So working with him, I really got a kind of a master's class in mentalism and making it look like you can read minds and do all those kinds of fun things. So that was really when I transitioned out of doing the magic tricks and more into doing the mind reading stuff, because it seemed to impact people a lot stronger, right? Because, okay, you found my card, whoop-de-doo. You just told me what street I grew up on. That is not right. Oh my God, like that's freaking me out. Like, yeah, I like that part better, right? So then once I transitioned into mentalism, I got really interested in figuring out why it's even possible, right? Being able to do it is one thing, but then going, wait a minute, how are we wired to even make this a possibility? Now that's really cool. So then after college and after working at the foundation, I started kind of really digging into that. And that's when I got really interested in the cognitive psychology and how people tick and why we believe what we believe and all that kind of fun stuff. So during that time, I had been making my living as a full-time touring mind reader. That's how I got to go entertain the troops stationed overseas and get on TV. So the show, it's a 70-minute show where I basically look like I can read minds on stage.
Okay.
And it's comedy and interactive and all that kind of fun stuff. But, you know, I'm helping people forget how awful their life is for an hour. You know, that is a noble cause. You know, that people need that. And people would kind of hang out afterwards, the autograph line, all that jazz. Well, there'd be a person off to the side almost every show, and everybody else goes through and they're waiting to the end. And then they come up to me and they go, man, I wanted to talk to you because you're living the life. You get to travel. You're getting paid for it. You're not stuck in a cubicle. I can't even imagine living how you live. And after hearing that enough times, it really clicked. People literally can't imagine anything other than the cubicle life, right? Like
that's crazy.
They literally can't imagine it. So I started recognizing that look. When people were off to the side after shows, I'm like, all right, I know exactly what it is that they're going to say and what they're going to talk about. Okay. So I got really excited to share my ideas with them. So here's how I went about it. Here's what I did. Here's how I got connected to people that could make things happen for me, right? Those were my first consulting clients.
Oh,
because
okay.
A year or two later, I started getting emails from people. Hey, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me after your show. What we talked about completely changed my mind and it changed my life. And now here's the really cool stuff I'm doing because of the talk we had. And once I started getting those emails, I realized, you know, there's a piece missing. Like the show is great. It's fun. And I get to have a lot of fun with it, but I'm only distracting people for an hour. And maybe later they go, you know what? What else could I do if I put my mind to it? Because I saw that guy do incredible things. So what could I do? But it's not as explicit, right? But now I figured out, I go, wait a minute. If I do coaching and consulting, then the weird psychology I'm using on stage is exactly what's used in marketing and employee retention.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just people skills. So now I can teach people the tools and techniques to make lasting change in their own life, to create a life that fits them exactly right. And
boom,
that's the start of my consulting. Then,
dude, I love it.
Yeah, one-on-one, people were saying the same thing. Man, I've never thought of it like that. And I'm like, yes, exactly. You change your mind on one thing. You learn how to think about something different on just one area. There's no end to how far that can play out in your life, right? So then from one-on-one coaching, I realized, well, if I start doing speaking, I can help more people at one time. So that's kind of the start of the speaking career. And then even from speaking, you can help a room full of people, but you know, mm-hmm. they have to show up at that place at that time or be lucky enough for their company to hire me to come in and do training sessions. So why not put all these lessons and conversations and ideas into a single book? So that's my new book is Think Like a Mind Reader. And that's kind of all together in one place where it's all the conversations I've had over the past decade as a performer with people after shows. And it's all in one book, and it actually teaches people how to use it to read the minds of their friends, because the mind reading trick is actually built into the physical book, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome.
That's the 40,000 foot overview of my whole life. There you go. The end.
I love it. I love it. So what would you say is the best part about your transformation and your journey so far?
The best part is, man, it's so much fun. Like along the lines, like I glossed over a lot of hardships and drawbacks and trouble, but it all is part of the journey. And the best part is just getting to work with really cool people and helping them see the world in a new way and seeing the impact that makes.
I love that. All right. So what was the worst part about it, or what has been?
Oh, man, learning the hard way has been the worst part. Because I tried doing the standard social narrative thing, right? The get married, then get a job, like that kind of thing. So I've been married to somebody who, she's phenomenal. She's an amazing person. We're just not a good match, mainly because I'm not a good match for her, right? Because my life is not
like it.
Yeah, my life is not stable, right? It's kind of like some people can schedule out 8 months and know exactly where they're going to be at 3 p.m.
Yep.
And that brings them deep happiness. I can't do that. It's kind of like, where are you going to be in 2 weeks? I don't know, right? So we got together, and then pretty soon thereafter, I hit the road as a full-time performer. And when we were dating, I was around all the time. And then when I started performing, I was on the road about 280 days out of the year. Well,
wow,
that's most of the year. So she was like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm like, yeah, you're right. So let's go our separate ways. No, I'm still glossing over a lot of other fun stuff.
Right.
That's awful. So yeah, it takes,
that takes a toll,
everything.
Man.
Yeah, it really does, because you know what you really, truly want out of life requires you to sacrifice everything in order to get it. Because if you aren't where you want to be, where you are now, you have to burn it, right? You got to change it, which means not being in that dynamic anymore. And that is terrifying and scary and uncomfortable and painful,
right?
And awful, and your friends won't understand. Like it requires you to sacrifice everything. Otherwise, what it is you really want becomes what it is you sacrifice for a life that other people might approve of, but you know deep down isn't fit for you. But sense yeah. the social pressure is there, the family pressure is there. You stuff down what it is you know deep down is what you have to do. Well, that then becomes the thing that you sacrifice, and you kill that part of yourself that makes you want to wake up and be excited to face the day. So either way, it's going to be painful. It requires sacrifice. It's just which one is worth it for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it resonates with me because being in the military and building a speaking business, I mean, I know exactly what it's like. You know, you're kind of on the road, and then there's some times where, okay, I got some time to settle down, and then one goes off to another, and then, okay, now I'm back months later because I was deployed somewhere. Okay, let's pick up where I left off, and it, like, trying to settle down. I've gotten off of one plane onto another to go places. Like, it's just, it's crazy. The life sounds glamorous, but then it becomes lonely, and it becomes, you start to miss things, and it's yeah. Definitely. And the worst thing about entrepreneurship, I think, is just that. Like, you miss out on so much because we're so focused on our end game. You know, we start to lose things along the way. There's friends that I don't talk to anymore. There's relationships that I'll never get back. And there, I mean, it's just, that's just what happens.
Yeah. See, like, my brother yep. married his high school sweetheart. They're still together. They've got daughters. And they still have friends that they went to junior high with. They still live in the same area, and they have incredible roots and a phenomenal social network of real people in real life, mm-hmm. not just Facebook friends, but right. real human beings that they can call and talk to face to face in 10 minutes that right. have 20, 30 years background of knowing who they are and being able to depend on them. That's a dynamic I will never understand. Like, I don't get yep. the privilege of having that kind of connection. But then other people that kind of live in that dynamic, yeah, they look at the, wow, you travel so much, you get to go all over the world, and wow, it's super glamorous. Like, it's really glamorous. If you like being alone in hotel rooms, driving in rental cars by yourself, and spending time in airports.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Because you yep. you fly somewhere, you get in the rental car, have to drive 3 hours into the middle of nowhere to be where you're supposed to be. Then you set up 2 hours early, and there's the sound guy to talk to. And that poor man, because you've been cooped up by yourself for 2 days traveling, basically. And he's the first human being that you unleash yep. on. Hey, man, how's it going? Great to see you. What's your story? What's your background? What got you into tech? What's your – right? And he's not ready for that. He's like, man, I'm just here to do my job and make you sound right. good. Like, awesome. That's great. Then the audience piles in, and then you've got an hour to connect with all those people. And, man – If you out there listening in Radio Land have ever felt awkward about going up to a performer, to a speaker, to anybody who's just been on stage, and you felt weird because you don't want to inconvenience them, you aren't. Please go up, say hi to them, shake their hand, and talk to them, because they
yeah.
desperately need human interaction. Right? Like,
I'll tell you what, man. The poor sound guy is the entertainment company's version of a bartender.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Just unload on him. You would not believe the drive-in. Well, I bet. I'm gonna take. I gotta go get some cords.
Right.
Speakers.
Yep. But it really is. It's all worth it, right? Because the impact it makes and the number of people that I help. And I've started focusing more on Chicago-based companies, so that way I don't have to travel so much, and I get to sleep in my own bed. That's fantastic. But, you know, anybody that's willing to pay the rate to get the benefits for their company, I'll be there, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got to ask, I mean, you already pretty much blew this thing out of the water. So who's been your biggest influencer I mean, you mentioned some couple names. You had some mentors, which is key, having mentors and not trying to figure things out on your own.
Yeah.
But if you had to pick one or two, like, is there certain influences you're like, man, this, like, I feel like the magician enterprise, if you will, the profession is kind of small. It's a pretty small community. So is there one or two people that have really stood out to you? Like, yeah, dude, their stuff, I follow their stuff, and it really influences me to step up my game.
Absolutely. And you're right. The magic world is really small. I had the privilege of consulting with Chris Angel on a project a couple years ago.
No
way. His creative consultant, like the lead creative consultant, his name is Banachek, and he's a world-class mentalist in his own right. And in the mentalism world, if you go, all right, who's the best? He's one of the first names that you'll ever hear. One of the smartest people on the planet. And he got his start when he was 16, 17, working with Randy. So we have the same mentor. Huh. So we kind of have that in common. So that's kind of how I got to connect with him. Just stay connected with him over the years and see the level of quality and commitment to his craft that he has and the way he's been able to make a living doing it. Like, man, I got a high bar to live up to. So him first, later on, another great influence of mine and mentor is David Hyra. He's a professional speaker, and back in the day, he was one of six executives at Sharp Electronics that took it from a $150 million company to a multi-billion dollar company back in the 80s. He was one of the VP executives that made that happen. So he saw the corporate world from the inside out and realized, man, I can deliver a lot of value to other people in a better way as a speaker. So he kind of put down the VP executive mantle and picked up the speaker process and just kind of has been making a living doing that for the past 20, 30 years. So he kind of took me under his wing and went down to Costa Rica, spent a week with him, and he just taught me his whole system inside and out and really taught me how to connect companies with their people, whether it's employees or customers or soon to be clients. Using my skills as a mentalist, I know how to talk to people. I know how to connect with people. And think about Flo, right? From Progressive commercials, right? She's kind of like a mascot for Progressive. And when she comes on the YouTube commercial or wherever you're going to see her, like, all right, what wacky thing is she going to do next? Well, I'm kind of that mascot for different companies, because anytime they've got awards banquets or employee appreciation events or customer appreciation trade shows, hospitality suites, right? Anytime people get together to connect with the company, don't just leave it to Carl from accounting who knows how to talk on a microphone, right? He's not a professional speaker. He's not a professional audience engagement specialist, right? So people get on the microphone and then just ramble on with no point. Mm-hmm. Right? Just like, hey everybody, glad you're here.
like every opening anywhere.
Exactly.
How is everybody doing? Like,
yeah. Just like, please don't ask. Tell them how they're doing. You guys are having fun. All right.
Yeah, like right.
That's the mark of it. So I help companies figure out how to connect with their people, right? And that is super valuable to companies, right? Imagine the awards banquets at the end of the year. Yep. I have seen so many times from the event planners that come to me and they go, I ask them, so last year at the awards banquet, were people like just high-fiving each other and be like, I'm going to get that next year, you watch out? Or did they just leave them on the table or just throw them out? Where were the awards? They're like, yeah, it was really boring. And as soon as people got their awards, they left and they didn't even take the awards with them. And it's just totally lackluster, right? Because people don't know how to make it an exciting experience. They don't know how to connect that company to the people that matter. I ask them, what did you do for the spouses? right? Did you show appreciation to the spouses? Did you thank those people that are giving up their relationship with their spouse, right? Because you're asking your employees to work overtime, to give everything they've got. And that spouse back home, right? They could be your biggest champion or your biggest enemy. And they resent you taking their spouse away from them. Did you show them any appreciation for that sacrifice and dedication to your company? You didn't?
Mm.
Oh, that's going to be something we want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Like, kind of help them open their eyes to how many ways they aren't using to really connect with their employees, to their people. So my specialty is helping those companies appreciate their people and really facilitate a connection with them that's fun, engaging, memorable, but also meaningful, right? I help connect people with their heart to the company,
right,
in a way that just Carl from accounting's not going to be able to do.
Carl from accounting.
Right. Sorry, Carl, that's from awesome accounting. You're just my straw man for that experience. But yeah, but I've just seen it so often, and it breaks my heart.
It's
because
an Office Space, you know, moment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Through my stapler. Have you seen my stapler?
Right. Bring this thing to the ground. Right. So that's why I'm a safe bet. I help them limit their liabilities, improve their assets, and then that's why 80% of my work is with repeat clients. People that try me out once and then go, oh my goodness, that was amazing. We've never seen anything like that. And it's such a crazy demonstration, right? Being able to tell people what street they grew up on is just, it affects them on a deep emotional level. And then when you can interweave the message that the event organizer is trying to convey to the audience, well, that message gets woven into that experience in a way that the audience literally can't forget. Like, I've had people see me 3 years later and go, you're the guy. You're the mind reader guy.
You're the guy.
They may not remember my name, but they will definitely remember how amazed they felt, right? And that's the emotional connection that lasts. That's what's really important. So yeah, that's kind of another side to my business. Is helping businesses connect with their people.
That's awesome. I love that. It's so, like, I've gone to events and try to, like, you know, pump people up, whatever. They're like, we're just not used to it because guys just come in and say what they're going to say and then they leave. And I'm like, oh man, that's so boring.
Right.
Like, I don't
exactly
want to be at an event like that.
Yeah. And that's an art form, right? It's some of my biggest failures and as a speaker or as an entertainer is when you have multiple engagements every day, right? So maybe you're doing the same 45-minute presentation for six different groups in one day, right? So then you remember, okay, I can't start off too strong because it's going to freak them out, and then they get way too shy. So you do the first group perfectly, right? You warm them up slowly, you get them excited, and then they realize, oh, it actually is interactive and I'm not going to be punished for shouting out, and he's not going to attack me like a comedian does. So this is actually a safe space to have fun. Okay, this is great. And then by the end, we're all laughing and high-fiving together and being wacky. But then you as the speaker are riding that high. Then the second group comes in, then you still think they're your best friends from the first group, and then you're talking to them like you're already best friends at the high energy level, and they're not there yet, right? And it just kind of pushes them away. They're like, whoa, I'm not used to this. This guy is just way too much for me. I am uncomfortable, right? So having to kind of scale back and remember, okay, I've got to get them in the car before we can drive to where I want to take them to. If I blow past them at 80 miles an hour, I'm not going to be able to take them where I need them to go.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm curious, you had mentioned something about you know, some of your greatest failures. And was there one trick or one thing that you've done that just didn't quite land, or maybe when you were starting out? Like, I've heard of people like blowing stuff up on accident. I've heard of people getting injured. I know one guy had some powder or something, and it didn't, he's supposed to, like, you know, snap your fingers and, you know, supposed to, like, poof, you know, type stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it, like, ended
yeah.
up burning his entire arm. Like, you know, and, like, blew up a desk, you know, by accident, because it was sitting in the desk.
Right,
you know, and
right.
The two powders mixed. So is there something that you did that didn't quite land, or was there something with, like, a trick that was like, yeah, that totally backfired and did not expect that to happen?
Dude, I have – I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of this, but I have a 45-minute story of how I got booed by 2,000 people. Every single thing that could have gone wrong went spectacularly wrong. Not just a little wrong, but in no way could you come back from it wrong every single time,
right.
every single thing. So long story short, back in when I was working more colleges as just kind of the entertainer side of things, there's a national organization of college entertainment. So it's a big conference, and the entertainers have a big trade show. You get your marketplace, you get your booth, and you've got your banners, and the students that book entertainment from all these thousands of colleges come to this conference to shop for entertainment for their whole year. Right. So they also have these showcases. So in the afternoon, they'll have a 2-hour showcase where the performers get 15 minutes. So there are only, what is it, 8 slots, and there are only so many of these showcases, but there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of entertainers here. So when you get a showcase slot, man, this is fantastic, because you get to show everybody what it is that you do instead of just talking about it in the booth, right? So you actually get to do a little bit right. of what you do. And I got a showcase spot. So this was the first time I'd gotten a spot, and this is – like, if you do a good job, you're booked for the whole next year, right? Because so many people see you and go, yeah, we want you. And then they put you on the calendar, and your calendar fills
right.
up 15 minutes. Then the next marketplace, when people come to your booth, you just created a whole year's worth of work. Like, that's the potential for when it goes mm-hmm. right. And I got booed by 2,000 people. Here's how.
Oh, Lord.
I went to sound check. Everything's great. But, you know, the thing is, a lot of sound guys will mute the line so as to not have feedback. But, you know, when the walk-on music starts and the line's muted, there's no walk-on music. So,
right.
like, I can't even explain how wrong everything went. But it was all my fault. Like, I thought... I started the walk-on music and it didn't play, and I thought that it was the music guy's fault at the soundboard. So I come out and there's no music playing, and I'm like, all right, I'm just not going to worry about it. And then I invite a woman up on stage, come on down. And as she's coming up on stage, I trigger the walk-on music for her. Nothing happens. I'm in the middle of a trick with her, and suddenly this wall of sound hits the audience. And I look over, and there's a team of tech people around my laptop that runs the sound for the show. The reason uh-huh. the music wasn't playing is I forgot to plug it back into the sound system after sound check. Right. But I took my laptop with me. When I come back for showtime, I put the laptop down, but didn't plug it into the system. So my program automatically will play the loop over and over and over infinitely until the person is up on stage. Then I fade it out with a controller that's built into the heel of my shoe. Right. It's just some real James Bond
that's
level
cool.
stuff.
Yeah,
right. Cool.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, dang.
Yeah. So I click my heel to start her walk on music, and it's playing. And then when I thought, you know what, I can't worry about this, I'm just going to focus on the performance, I never told the computer to fade it out. So the tech guys backstage hear my laptop playing and go, oh, no, it's not in the system. Well, the sound guy in the back who had the line wide open, like I asked him to, doesn't have it muted. Oh, so when the techies plug it in the back, wham, this music happens. This is right in the middle of a routine. Now, I know it's my fault. The tech people know it's my fault. And then I look over my shoulder and I see what's happening and I'm like, oh, hey, everybody, give it up for the sound guys that are doing a really good job of taking care of us. But it looks like I'm throwing them under the bus. Hey, guys, the sound guys just made a huge mistake. Give it up for them for doing a good job. That's how it read, right?
Right.
So I realize that I just came across as a jerk and go, oh, no, that's not the – oh, crap. I start getting the flop sweats. Now
– oh, yeah. Oh, I've been there.
I was in the middle of a magic trick, a mind-reading routine. It's very delicate, right? You have to manage people's attention. Otherwise, if they're distracted, they're confused. They don't know what's amazing about it, right? I guess I just missed it. Well, that huge – sound wall distracted everybody. So I'm in the middle of a trick with this woman and it actually works. And I go, what was your card? And she goes, the Eight of Diamonds. I turn it over and it's the Eight of Diamonds. And she goes, no, as in no way. But right. I realize that the audience is realizing or taking it as though I got it wrong. And she's amazed at how wrong it is. Like, no, how could you mess up this bad? Then I realized that that's how the audience was experiencing what was happening. Then I go, no, no, really, is that your card? And she goes, what? Oh, yes. Yes, that is my card. So she's realizing that she didn't react properly. But now her realizing that she came across wrong is coming across to the audience like I'm browbeating her into submission of just going along with it. So then the audience is thinking, this guy is awful, right? And then I go, all right, so next trick, three people. And I completely mess it up. It's supposed to be, it's the one of the most amazing things you'll ever see when it works right. But in that context, it completely just, I was wrong. Not even just a little off. No, I was just flat out wrong because I messed up the mechanics of how the whole thing works because I was so flustered. So I just failed. And on the third one, I tried something and it was just so wrong. And I have to explain this. Side note, back up a little bit. My grandpa was in World War II under General Patton in artillery. My dad was in the Air Force in Vietnam. My brother was in the 82nd Airborne in the Army and went overseas. Like, I have mad respect for the military.
Right.
So we're back to the performance. And I just completely flubbed three times in a row with people. And the drawings that are supposed to match are just way wrong. And then I go, well, close enough for government work. Right? Because that's just a saying. Well, it turns out that the people that book USO tours and MWR tours were in the audience. They were there. And they did not take too kindly to this fat, sweaty guy on stage who was messing up everything, saying, close enough for government work. So they start booing me. And then everybody else in the audience is like, yeah, that's appropriate. Boo! So they all are booing me. Now, piling on to that, this was the first national showcase that I had gotten with this agency that I was with. The silent partner in the agency who had been in showbiz for 40 years was like, hey, I'll be in the back taking notes and we'll talk about it afterwards and it'll be great. I'm like, awesome. He watched the whole thing happen in slow motion. Banachek was at that conference booking college shows. I specifically remember asking him to be there because I wanted to kind of show off for him, right? So he's in the back of the room watching this happen in slow motion. I'm in my head watching this happen in slow motion, realizing how many ways I've messed up to many different people in many different ways. all at the same time. Like, it was a phenomenal failure. It was amazing how bad it was. Like, it just, I crashed and burned. Like, there was no coming back from that. And after I get off stage and my shirt's just soaked through and I'm just miserable and just,
right,
it's awful, right? It was phenomenally awful. And the silent partner in the agency was like, well, I have some notes for you. Like, yeah. To this day, Banachek is like, dude, I wasn't there. I don't know what you're talking about. He is such a gentleman that he will never own up to the fact that he watched that happen. He's like, no, I wasn't there. You're misremembering stuff. Right.
Yep.
Now, here's crazy lesson. Months later, my agent follows up with the people that were at the conference a while ago. Like, hey, it's been a while since the conference and we're looking forward to the next year. And here's what we have on offer. And one of the entertainment bookers for the MWR, the military tour, was like, oh, Johnny Zavant, my performing name, Johnny Zavant. I remember him. Yeah, he sounds familiar. All right, let's go with him. She didn't remember why she remembered my name. She just remembered my name. I was familiar. And therefore, since I was familiar, okay, let's go with him.
Wow. Wait, she didn't remember that you failed. She just says, oh, I remember his name.
Exactly. Like, how messed up is that? And at that instant, I was cured of failure, right? It doesn't matter. Like, you fail so hard. Fail your little heart out, man. Just fail, fail, fail. Don't fail on purpose. Like, try to succeed. But, dude, when you fail, who cares, right? Learn your lesson, do better next time, and that's the only way you're going to learn to never do that again, right? Like, I am going to check that my laptop is plugged into the sound system every time. I have never had that issue ever again. I've never screwed up that routine that badly ever again, right? So the failure is there to teach you those lessons. And the fact that you failed means you needed that lesson. So my hope for my life is to make more interesting failures every year. I don't want to be making the same mistakes. I want to be making more and more interesting failures from here on out. And even when you fail, it still has the equivalent potential to succeed, right? The only way it's an actual failure is when you ignore the lesson it's trying to teach you. And then, you know what? You're going to fail in exactly the same way again because you didn't learn the lesson. And if you don't learn the lesson the second time, you're going to fail in exactly the same way a third time. You're going to keep failing exactly the same way until you go, all right, what is the situation trying to teach me? Right?
Oh,
Am I going wrong? And then when you finally start asking questions about your failures, then you're going to start getting better answers. But when you believe that you're a failure or that, well, everything happens for a reason and I'm awful, that's the wrong way to take the lesson, right? So, yeah, that's
absolutely.
That was a huge failure.
I had,
and that's not even all of it.
I had an event. I thought I was rocking it. You know, I was like, bam, 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 bam. And it goes into, you have to know your audience and you have to know how people behave. Cause I'm really good about being mindful of, okay, this guy has his arms crossed. This guy just rolled his eyes at me. Okay. This guy is kind of like looking at me like, what are you talking about? I just used to go up there and just deliver, 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 deliver. Yeah. Look at me, you know, but I was never mindful of the audience. Like, okay, they're not getting it. They're kind of nodding. This guy just got up and walked out. You know what I mean? I just got out there, delivered and walked away. And I got halfway through and there was a couple of people that were kind of sitting close and they just go, what are you even talking about? Like in the middle of my thing. I was like, well, what do you mean? And that's not the point of human interaction is midway through your presentation, go, well, what do you mean? And then they give you give the audience full rein to blast you.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Dude. Oh, God, dude. It was so bad.
Awful.
They were like, did you even, I mean, this makes no sense. Like, you lost me at hello. And I was like, oh, well, that's a great Jerry Maguire movie, and try to, like, put a joke on it. And she's like, no, I'm being serious. You absolutely suck. Like, everybody, you absolutely suck. I was
brutal.
Like, oh, God.
Oh, that's
yeah,
brutal.
Dude, it was so brutal. I just stood up there. I had no idea what to do. And I was like, well, let's go to the next slide. And then when I went to the next slide, it was actually the end of the presentation. And I looked at my watch, and I had delivered 23 slides in 10 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
Maybe that's why they didn't get it. Because the 23 slides were supposed to be about a 45-minute presentation. I literally gave my 45-minute presentation in 10 minutes.
Holy cow.
Like, that's what it came out to. And they're like, what? Like, what?
Right.
There was no pacing. There was no, like, speed. There was no nothing. It was, I came on stage and went, blah. And then I was supposed to, but I didn't even realize, I wasn't mindful of the time. I wasn't. Like, I, oh, yeah, it was so bad. Oh, God. And 23 slides full of text with no picture.
Right. Oh, man. There's so many reasons that's bad. Oh.
Dude. When I walked off the stage, I got, like, a couple of people clapping because there's more that was said and whatever else. And the event organizer was like, that's by far the worst presentation, and you're never welcome here again. I was like, oh,
I understand completely. Thank you for honest feedback.
Like, like, yeah, I'm just, and that was a point where I was like, do I even, like, am I even good at this? Like, do I even want it? Like, I'm just going to quit. Like, I can't, this sucks. You know?
Awful. But, yeah.
Dude, I had no idea that PowerPoint presentation is supposed to be a couple lines of text, maybe some pictures, include some video. Nope. I used all of that slide for all of the text. Like, paragraph of text,
oh,
man.
That is
so
brutal.
Yeah, it was literally death by PowerPoint on steroids and horse tranquilizer. That was pretty much my presentation. It was so bad.
Amazing. That is a spectacular failure.
Dude, it was so bad. So that I looked up, I was like, well, what's wrong with my slides? What's wrong? Yeah, totally did some research on what's actually supposed to be in a PowerPoint presentation, not text.
That is amazing. Yeah, presentation time is so much different than personal time, right? You get on stage and it feels like forever and only 5 minutes have passed, or you think you're 5 minutes in and it's 45 minutes later and you've got 3 minutes left for questions. You're like, what is going on? It is super weird to deal with. Man,
absolutely.
That's incredible.
Yep. So let's talk about where you're headed now as we wrap up the show. I can't believe it's already been almost an hour. Hey, so where are you headed now? Like great segue. So dude, I could talk to you forever, man. I could talk to you forever. So where are you headed now? Like, is there a name for your business or for a company? Or I know your stage name, Johnny Zavant, but like, how do people hire you real quick? How do people hire you? Do they find you on your website, word of mouth? How if I wanted to hire you, how would I do that?
Yeah. The best way to do that is to go to the site, likeamindreader.com, because the idea behind that is I love asking new clients and people that I know I could help. I go, all right, how would your business be better if you could actually read minds? And they go, oh man, there would be this and that and this. Like, that's exactly what I can help you do. Because asking them that question is really a ninja way of saying, what problems are you having connecting to people? Right? Because the people love focusing on the technology of their business or the nuts and bolts and the widget and that kind of stuff. And they completely ignore the most important part of the whole equation, people, right? So
yeah,
I help those companies connect to people. So I help companies negotiate like a mind reader, influence like a mind reader, sell like a mind reader, present like a mind reader, right? That it's blank like a mind reader. So that's why the site is likeamindreader.com. So there are really three prongs to what I do. The first one is kind of the entertainment angle, right? If you're having an event and you've got a cocktail hour and you need icebreakers, I help people do that. If you're having an awards banquet and you want an MC that'll actually engage the audience and keep things moving in a fun way, I do that, right? Or if you just want an after dinner show, a little something different, you know, but not too wacky. Well, I do my mind reading show still customized to each company. So that's the entertainment side. Then I've got the speaker side where it's more, so the entertainer is like 80% haha fun, 20% message. The speaker is more like 80% message, 20% haha and demonstrations of the ideas that we're talking about. So
perfect.
So that's the kind of keynote and that kind of thing. Then the third prong is the training sessions, right? So I come in and work with sales teams, R&D departments, right? Because people think that negotiation skills are only for the salespeople. But the cool thing is, imagine the R&D guy has this brilliant idea, but doesn't know how to communicate how it's going to save the company millions of dollars, right?
Wow.
He has to sell it to his boss in a way that the boss will understand. Then the boss is going to have to sell it to the VP of finance to justify why investing these thousands of dollars are going to make us millions of dollars. That's a sales process.
Right.
That's a sales technique issue. So these internal communication courses are invaluable for companies. So that's what I help people do is improve their customer service, their salesmanship, their presentation skills, right? If you're a young company and you're pitching investors, all right, you're really good at writing code, but if your presentation skills are 40 slides in 10 minutes, no, like you're literally talking yourself out of millions of dollars of investment capital, right? So all these skills are super important, and the different ways I can help people are all at like a mindreader.com. So you just kind of figure out what it is you're looking for, what you need, and then get you plugged into the right place.
Love it. So as we wrap up, can you deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone?
Absolutely. My favorite motto, there are two. Okay, there are two. Einstein said, relationships are the most powerful force in the universe. Right? Because, again, it's all people.
Absolutely.
Now, I got to let you in on a secret. Einstein didn't say that. I said that. That's my quote. But now that I said Einstein said it, you're going to associate it with Einstein being that smart. So then I'm, by law of transitive properties, now as smart as Einstein. So that's a dirty trick. I'll admit, that's a dirty trick. So I said that.
Wow. Okay.
Right?
I got you.
Relationships really are the most important thing, because any success I've ever had, it's because of the relationships that I've built, not because I developed the perfect Facebook ad. I can do that, but it's human to human connection that's really important, right? So that's
perfect.
It.
Yep.
Yeah. And second is just create something, you know, create something, fail fast.
Yeah.
You're on this planet.
Absolutely. But fail forward.
Something that, exactly. Just make something, anything, and it will have never existed before. And by the very act of creating, you've made the world a better place. So do that.
Absolutely. So give us a call to action. Is that what it is? Is just create something, whatever it is you're going to do, like create moments, create products, live a dream. Like, what is that call to action?
Yep. Like here's another way I like to say it is, people often ask me about motivation. Like, how do I get motivated? I feel like I'm missing motivation. Look, motivation will not get you results. Results will get you motivated. So go out there, create something, make stuff happen, and then when it happens, you'll go, oh, I want more of that. And then that's where motivation comes. Motivation comes later, not before. So if your excuse for not creating something is you don't feel motivated, of course you don't, because you're not creating anything. So go out there, use your efforts to create something awesome for the world.
There you go. Dude, I love it. Thanks for coming on the show, man. I've had a blast. I learned a lot. We shared some failures. dude, I love it. I love it, man. Go to facebook.com/likeamindreader and the website www.thinklikeamindreader.com. Hook up with Jonathan Pritchard. The dude is phenomenal. The dude rocks, and he will literally blow your mind, blow your socks off with his skills. Absolutely incredible, dude. I appreciate you, man.
A note before we go, the thinklikeamindreader.com is kind of the landing page for my new book that's on pre-sale right now at a discount. It's going to go live in a week from this broadcast. It's going to go, and then it'll be full price. So go to thinklikeamindreader.com, and from there you can go to likeamindreader.com. It's all one big web of me. Like, it's get plugged in. I want to hear from you out there in Radio Land. If you listened this long, we have to connect. So reach out. I want to hear from you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, thank you so much, man, for being on the show. I have had so much fun, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to do it again. And hopefully I'll make my way to Chicago at some point.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for allowing me to share my passion and connect with your audience. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Life Transformation Radio listeners, if anything resonated with you, hook up with Jonathan Pritchard, look him up, connect with him, go to one of his shows. You will not be disappointed. I'm telling you, the guy is amazing. So if anything resonated with you, check us out on iTunes. The show will be uploaded to iTunes and Stitcher within a day or two. And you can go back, review, share it, like, comment. We love reading the comments about what people think about the show. And again, all of the show notes have the links and everything to get in touch with whoever you want to get in touch with. So this has been another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I want to thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your time. Have a safe Labor Day weekend. And before we go, I always say live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold deep in your heart. I call that living your brand. And until next time, have a good night.